Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Fran, do you remember our Glow Up Awards episode where we talked?
How could I forget? It was a great episode.
Yeah, so class, if you haven't listened to our Glow Up Awards episode, it came out in late December at the end of the year where we just did a recap of all of the events that happened throughout the year, and we assigned superlatives, most music moment of the year, best podcast of the year. I'll give you one hint who that was. So go back and listen to that. But one of the things we talked about was how people, while accepting their awards, they get up there and they have no remarks prepared.
Oh, but it's one of my biggest pet peeves. Just up there crying and bubbling, forgetting everybody's name. Like, write your shit down.
Listen, honestly, though, I'm going to be one of those idiots who's up there blubbering when I accept my award. But okay. I'm also going to rehearse the speech I'm going to come prepared. You know, I'll be ready.
Oh, really? Okay, you know what? Let's put you to the test.
Oh, not the tone. Wait, right now?
Yes, right now.
Wait a minute. Let me get set up.
Yes. And the award for best actor goes to the face you're making right now.
I'm just waiting.
DeLon Grant.
Actress. I would like to thank all of the little people. No, I honestly would like to thank Niecy Nash and Snoop Dogg for this phrase, because I would like to thank me. Okay.
Ooh.
Because it requires a lot to get past my demons every day, and it takes a lot of strength to do what I do. So I want to thank me and also my agent, also my family, also hire me, because I would love a job.
Not you using your speech to beg for work.
I would also even give you like a little bit of like a political moment. I'd be like, Flint has water now, but at what cost, America? At what cost?
Okay.
You know?
Yes. Okay. Wait. Do me now.
Okay. Up next, the award for best production design goes to...
Wait. I'm sorry. I'm not up for an acting award? Best production design? What is that?
Not today. No, listen. You're creative. You make things with your hands.
Okay, but I just feel like.
Okay. Listen. Well, we'll give you best production design and like and actress. That's a later award.
Am I getting best actress, best supporting?
Okay, now pump the brakes. Listen, we've already upgraded you once, girl. Damn, supporting.
Why supporting and not acting?
Well, I mean, you're probably because you're probably in a comedy and it takes a drama to really get best actress. Am I wrong? Am I wrong?
Okay, you know what? Announce my goddamn award so I can get my speech.
The award for best production design / supporting actress goes to Francesca Ramsey.
Oh my gosh! Thank you so much. 5 times in one night, guys. I just, if you could have told 13-year-old Francesca that she would have EGOTted at just 41, she never would have believed it. I'm being moved to tears. I feel like I put so much of myself into this role and into this production to win for production design for best supporting actress, for director.
You are
such a first of all, you did not make me my category. And now you play the music.
You know they were coming for you. You you know that music was coming for you.
Ooh, wait. No.
Listen. Wait.
I hate you for that.
Let me fix it.
Hello, and welcome back to Let Me Fix It, the podcast that says, ain't no party like an Oscars party, because an Oscar party don't stop. Literally, because they last all night long. That show never ends. It's the longest show on TV. I'm DeLon Grant. I'm an actor, a singer, a photographer, and a writer.
And I'm Francesca Ramsey. I'm an actress. I'm a producer, a writer, and a former graphic designer, despite being snubbed by my co-host for a Best Actress nomination in class. The 96th Annual Academy Awards were this past Sunday, and while there were not any slaps, any falls up the stairs, or Adele Dazeem mentions, we know that there was a lot to talk about.
Absolutely. I mean, it is the Oscars, so plenty still happened. Oppenheimer took home 7 awards on Sunday. Our personal favorite of this podcast, the film American Fiction, took home the award for Best Adapted Screenplay. Congratulations to Court Jefferson. Jimmy Kimmel was back hosting and had plenty of friendly jokes that still managed to razz the audience. He even got in a little dig about not mixing up the envelope for Best Picture after Emma Stone won for Best Actress. That's a reference to one of the last times he hosted in 2013, which we will mention in this episode. Hold on to your shorts for that one. We also talk about another Oscars history moment in this episode that was mentioned on Sunday. In 1974, a streaker runs across stage, which is insane, but we also are about to talk about that one in this episode as well.
But instead of doing a recap of the 2024 Oscars, like every other podcast, we thought, why not look back on the history of the Academy Awards?
Because isn't it funny how an event as ubiquitous as the Oscars that most of us have...
As what?
I couldn't even get through it before she's making fun of me. No, like an event as ubiquitous as the Oscars, right?
Stop trying to make ubiquitous happen. Like, Dylan, do you? I just feel like you got some sort of kink going on here, and I don't consent.
No, ubiquitous is in the, it's in the lexicon.
Why you gotta say ubiquitous? You gotta
say ubiquitous.
Because I don't want to. Because I don't want to say it. I don't want to give you the sick gratification of hearing me say it, you freak.
I am on,
why?
Because I am on a campaign to make you believe in the things I believe. This is called propaganda, okay? No, I just think it's funny that, like, you know, the Oscars has always been around, and a lot of us don't even know how it came to be. So don't worry, class. You know, don't fret. We've already done the Googling for this episode. We got you, okay? So this week, we're going back in time to find out how this famous telecast came about. How did the Academy Awards go from handing out trophies left and right to TV's longest night? And more importantly, who named that statuette Oscar? I mean, it does look like an Oscar, right?
I can't tell you I know any Oscars.
Or, I mean, it kind of looks like a Francesca, actually.
I mean, it is bald. Okay. And it loves gold.
My point exactly. And as usual, once we've explored the history of the Oscars, we'll each offer how we would fix it. So let's dive in. The Oscars. Let me fix it.
We can't talk about the Academy Awards without mentioning the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences, AMPAS.
Such a mouthful.
I know. It's too much. And AMPAS does not roll off the tongue.
I know. It sounds like calling somebody an ass. AMPAS?
Yeah, AMPAS. It sounds weird. Yep. But AMPAS was established in 1927 in the heart of the Prohibition era and just before the Great Depression. It was the brainchild of Louis B. Mayer, the film executive at the helm of the juggernaut movie studio Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer. Think of that big lion's head roaring before your movie.
Idiot. Factoid, Tony Goldwyn, the actor who played President Fitzgerald Grant III on the hit TV show Scandal, is the grandson of Samuel Goldwyn, so he's one-third of Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer.
What?
Just proving yet again that Hollywood is a family business full of Nepo babies. I love Tony Goldwyn, though.
The Nepo connection, I didn't know. I love Tony Goodwin. You know who else loves Tony Goodwin? Kerry Washington.
Oh.
I just know that their spouses are God's strongest soldiers because the sexual chemistry between those two on screen and off screen. DeLon, have you seen them doing press together? They're like holding hands.
Are you kidding me?
Honestly, I feel like I'm interrupting.
Wow. You know what? I love that, though. Like, there's something about platonic love that I think we need to explore. I feel like Shamika right now, like the woo, our friend Shamika. Just like platonic love.
That is definitely something Sham would say. Right? She's always like, you could be romantic with your friends, have a love life with your friends. Totally. Yes, that's what they have. It's very hot. So Louis B. Mayer, along with 36 other film industry leaders, launched AMPAS under the guise of uniting the five branches of the film industry: actors, directors, producers, technicians, and writers. Their goal with its creation was to have common ground to discuss industry-wide procedures and new technologies. But it was also a vehicle for union busting.
That's right. The evil comes in. In 1916, the American Federation of Labor, currently the AFL-CIO, so that's the American Federation of Labor and Congress of Industrial Organizations, was pushing really hard to unionize the contract craftsmen in America's new booming film industry. So contract craftsmen were the workers who build things and make the behind-the-screen elements of filmmaking work. This included set designers and builders, costume designers, costume personnel, lighting designers, camera operators, technicians, sound personnel, everyone, right?
It's
ad nauseum. So
if you're not on stage,
you are
making the show happen.
And thank God for them, because they really do make the movie industry work. So from about 1916 to about 1921, Hollywood film studios would experience three major strikes by this group of contract craftsmen. So AMPAS, or the Academy, was to function as the antidote. It was like they were saying, no, you don't need a union. Just join our little club over here. Just sit down and we can talk about it. You know? Brandon, it's giving elitist preservation, right? Like, let's give this illusion of creating a seat at the table by creating an entity that we control to negotiate these labor disputes and keep collective bargaining at bay. Big capitalism, man.
It's wild. This history blew my mind during our research. And a factoid, this episode is extra timely because IATSE and the Teamsters, aka the unions that currently cover Hollywood's crew members, recently started their negotiations for their 2024 contract with the studios. So shout outs to them.
Hey.
Give the studios hell. IATSE and the Teamsters, they stood with the writers and the actors during the 2023 strikes, and we are ready to ride for them if need be this year.
Let's go.
As we are learning, the studios have been trying to screw all of us since day
inception.
Like, it's wild. They literally just do not want to give us any money. So the union busting that inspired the creation of the Academy was common practice in big business at the time, and is still to this day. We looking at you, Amazon. We looking at you, store.
Talk
books.
About it.
You might also remember that we talked about one CEO here on the pod, George Eastman, the founder of Kodak. So we got a little Kodak callback.
Hey.
We did an episode called Kodak Dropping the Digital Ball. Go back and listen if you haven't already. We'll put a link in the show notes. In that episode, we learned about how in 1912, Kodak's founder, George Eastman, began offering benefits like workers' comp and profit sharing to all of the Kodak employees just to avoid the threat of unionization. He said, you know what? Guess what? I'm going to give you these goodies and then y'all won't work together. In 1919, he would even go so far as to sell a large portion of his stock in the company to employees below market value to keep them from unionizing. Class, they don't want you and your coworkers talking to each other.
Well, and here's what's crazy to me is that Eastman did all of this, spent all this money, sold his own stock to avoid unionization. I don't know if that's simply about power, because it's clearly not about money. If you're willing to go to those lengths.
Well, he knew like I'll lose this little bit of money, but in the long run, I'll lose more money if these motherfuckers are working together.
Right.
Okay. So meanwhile, the Academy of Motion Pictures and Arts and Sciences was like, who needs a union? Instead, we're gonna create this little group to talk about stuff.
The talkies are talking. So that's because the thing the film studios feared the most was that the talent, the movie stars, might unionize and thus have collective bargaining power, like we were just saying. Movie stars have always been the face of the film industry, but in 1927, they mattered even more. Without its movie stars, there literally was no film industry.
Mm-hmm.
And back then, as long as they were paid, movie stars generally did what studio executives asked of them. But if the stars were to unionize, they might ask for things like health care, sharing of the revenue, or worse, residual. Jesus.
Oh, can't give them that.
Okay. Just a factoid here. Residuals are percentage payments that are made to the creatives of a project when a TV or a film project they worked on is redistributed. So if you worked on a show and it's a hit, the writers and actors get to reap the benefits via residuals instead of just the suits, just those executives up there. And you might remember the streaming residuals were one of the major sticking points for the WGA SAG-AFTRA strikes last year. So it's still happening.
That is true. And you know what? Another factoid here, the studio said we would never, you are never going to get residuals. And guess what? We did SAG and WGA, and it is just wild that the Academy Awards were essentially a consolation prize for basic shit.
It's a switch and bait, a bait and
basic
switch.
Basic shit.
Yeah.
You don't need healthcare. Have a gold little statue. Yeah, my leg. Shut up. Take this award. Here's another one.
Literally, fuck your teeth. Here's dinner.
it's bizarre. And the craziest thing is that all of this fear around unionizing sprang from real estate. Okay.
Nuts.
So Vanity Fair published a great article by David Thompson in 2014 titled "The House That Mr. Mayor Built: Inside the Union Busting Birth of the Academy Awards." So here is the scoop. Evidently, Louis B. Mayer, the head of MGM, wanted to build a vacation home on Santa Monica Beach, as one does.
Right.
You can't just have one home. You got to have two. He wanted the house to be ready for the summer of 1926. But he knew that going the traditional route and hiring architects and designers and contractors was going to take a long time. So he decided to use MGM's studio craftsmen. He's quoted by saying, "When we need a sudden studio, we build it overnight. We need a big village, we build it in a week. Don't be at the mercy of those contractors. Don't start with the architects. With us, it's business. It gets done. I will talk to the people at the studio. If it can be done in the summer, we will have the beach house."
See?
You like,
well done. So Mayer had MGM workers design and plot a six-week build of this new vacation home. However, the studio was about to go into contract with the soon-to-be-formed Craftsmen's Union, the International Alliance of Theatrical Stage Employees, like Fran was just saying, called IATSE. These union employees were going to be guaranteed certain working conditions, as you are in a union, including overtime, which meant if Mayer used those studio craftsmen for his build, it was going to cost him a lot in the end. So Mayer said, "Let me cut some corners and just hire a few studio laborers and a bunch of cheap labor outside of the studio to fast track the process and keep costs low." The build went forward and Mayer's extra home was completed in the spring of 1926. How about that?
That is ridiculous. That is like... Especially because you know he had the money. He had the money for the second home. And he's like, "But I don't want to spend it."
And I guess this is how rich people stay rich. But it also gives me a vision of, like, you know, you see maybe undocumented people working around Home Depot. People come pick them up in their truck and take them to the house to do contract work. But they're still voting for Trump. Ready?
Right. Exactly. It's like you want to reap the benefits of cheap labor,
right,
but you don't want the cheap labor to have any rights, any health care. You don't want them to be comfortable. You want them out of sight, out of mind.
Yes.
You want to snap your fingers and have them do the work, and then you want them to scatter as soon as they're done. And it's just so exploitative.
It's just so American. It's just like so American and capitalistic, right?
It's truly the American dream. So this second home labor woe was the first time that Mayer considered the potential challenges the studio might face if this union business started to spread to the other branches of Hollywood, i.e. actors, writers, directors. So less than a year later, he spearheaded creating the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences as a body to help resolve the industry's labor disputes. This is just one of those more insidious mechanisms of capitalism. Given enough people an appearance of a seat at the table through minimal influence and proximity to wealth, aka a shiny gold statue, and then you are able to maintain total control. But of course, Mayer's fears would be eventually realized when the Screen Actors Guild, SAG, was formed in 1933. And that same year, the Screenwriters Guild, today known as the Writers Guild of America, began organizing labor negotiations. And just 3 years later, the Directors Guild was also formed. Shout out to collective bargaining.
Hey. One of the more salacious details surrounding the establishment of Ampass is that the film industry was also beginning to have a serious public relations problem. So evidently, Hollywood had become known, according to this Vanity Fair article, as pretty kids with money to burn and wild on drugs, which, I mean,
has it even changed?
I mean, listen, that's why Petty Ford exists, right?
I mean, it's also like, it's also a lot of like pretty kids with no money now, speaking as two people that
in
are
the
like,
industry with no money.
To work.
Now, we know societies have always been obsessed with gossip about the rich and famous and influential since the printing press was invented, right? But some of these Hollywood scandals in the 1920s would give Olivia Pope pause. Just another scandal reference for you. Mm-hmm. So this was crazy. In 1921, model and actress Virginia Rapp is at a Labor Day weekend party in San Francisco. It's hosted by Roscoe Fatty Arbuckle, who was the highest paid actor in Hollywood at the time.
Wait, can I just say one thing? Can we bring back nicknames for celebs?
Fatty?
Fatty? Can you imagine someone be like, yeah, my name is Fatty? Like,
well, a fatty is like, you talk about somebody's booty, you know, she got a fatty.
Well, I don't think they were saying that he had a fat butt.
No, he was, I know, I've seen the pictures. He was large.
But like, we don't do that anymore.
What would your nickname be?
Babyface.
Babyface.
You know, you got that smooth skin.
Okay.
You're like, oh, okay, sure. What would your nickname be?
I was going to call you Tiny Titty. That's too.
Okay, class. If you have not listened to
that, was a foul best friend read.
No, it was great. I loved it so much. If you haven't listened to our acting school episode, our very first episode, I did disclose that I am the owner of a tiny titty. But every woman is. Every lady, we're an asymmetrical.
I mean, listen, this
beings.
Lady too. I mean, mine.
Okay. What would your name be?
A snaggle.
Oh, you got a snaggle.
I did Invisalign for a minute, but you know, I didn't wear that retainer. Oh, so, I mean, if it was before, it'd be like snaggle, you know?
Yeah, no, I wouldn't call you snaggle. I don't know what I would call
What would you call
you?
Me?
I don't know.
It would
I have
be
no
a
idea.
Reed. Ashy, big lips. I don't know. Something. So
Chapped Grant.
Chap. So Roscoe Fatty Arbuckle is hosting this big party, right, in San Francisco for Labor Day. He's the highest paid actor in Hollywood at this time. So Virginia Rapp is just searching for a vacant bathroom at this party, and she stumbles into Arbuckle's room. He follows her in. And he locks the door. Okay, already fucked up. Now, there are varying accounts of what actually happened next. But suffice to say that after that fateful encounter, Virginia Rapp fell gravely ill and died 4 days later. Arbuckle was then charged with her murder, but he was ultimately acquitted. This would become such a huge scandal in 1921, and it was Hollywood's biggest one.
Yeah, I mean, listen, to have two big stars and the circumstances of her death be very suspicious and a murder trial, I mean, it's like a movie. But this wasn't the only one, because in 1922, silent film director William Desmond Taylor is found shot dead in his home. Okay, now the murder is bad enough. But when they get to the crime scene, a bunch of prominent actors, actresses, and studio execs were rummaging around through his shit. This is a crime scene, not a garage sale. What's going on?
Yo, what were they looking for? Like, he had something. Look at me knitting a sweater, as we say. He had something on them.
I just, you know, the thing I think about, and this is truly because I listen to too many crime podcasts and too many shows. In the 1920s, you could just be out here killing people and you'd be like, I'm good to go. Now we got DNA. We got cameras
GPS,
everywhere. We got,
right?
When I hear about people committing crimes today, I'm like, do y'all not know how much technology we have? We gonna find you.
Well,
you know,
I feel like people listen to crime podcasts and they go, oh, I could do it like that. But maybe. Like forensics are forensics, like you're saying.
No. Well, and that's the thing too. It's like you kill somebody in the 80s, we find your ass 20 years later.
That part.
We get a new technology. You know, your cousin does 23andMe and then suddenly your ass is caught.
They've got many a person with that 23andMe.
Literally. So then you hear these stories about like in the 20s where they're rummaging around the crime scene That's the golden age of murder. Okay. Y'all are getting away with all types of shit. Nobody's coming for you.
The 20th century was full of gems, wasn't it? Damn.
Oh my gosh. Well, there was also a scandal surrounding two of Charlie Chaplin's four wives.
People got married 7,000 times.
I guess so. I mean, divorce must have been cheaper back then or something.
Crazy.
The way it looks today. okay, so listen to this. Two of his four wives were under the age of 18. He said, buy one, get one. We doing two for two.
Wow.
So then when he's getting divorced in his second marriage to Lita Gray, mind you, she was 15 and he was 34 married. How is that legal?
It wasn't. But people, here's the problem with power. People weren't saying anything. People never asked how old that child was.
Literally, she was a baby. So during the divorce proceeding, she recounts that he was abusive, but she also told the courts that he enjoyed oral copulation, which was illegal. It was illegal to slob on that knob in California.
Well, Fran, you have several indictments then, huh,
girl? No, I am in remission.
You really are, though.
Well, oh, my God. People are going to be listening to this podcast, and they're like, damn, Francesca is out here. She's a poor girl. We about to start a GoFundMe for Francesca. Can Francesca get some action?
Could she get a little? No, listen, she lives a private life. I'm just putting her on Front Street, okay? Well, I remember all of these scandals from Hollywood, they were all happening on the backdrop of prohibition and a culture of media frenzy, right? There's no TV. People are just reading periodicals and newspapers. Yeah. So while society had an intense curiosity about these salacious stories, it also maintained a strong sense of like righteous moralism. And the film industry was still fairly new at the time. So all this bad press started adding up and the public was beginning to grow sour on the film industry elites. Mob mentality is real. Just ask the era of disco. Do you know what I mean by that, Fran? The era of disco ending? The day disco died?
Oh, you mean like when people were like breaking disco records? I mean, listen, if we gonna get real, a lot of that was racism.
It was racism and homophobia. Ready?
They were literally.
So class, at a White Sox game, I forget what year it was, but there was a White Sox and Detroit Tigers game. This big radio DJ was like, we're gonna burn disco records. This is the last day of disco. It's a doubleheader. In between the games, they literally put crates of disco records on the field and blew them up.
No.
What in the world?
No. I mean, I didn't know it was at a baseball game, but also, like, can you just be any more on the nose? You're playing your boring ass fucking baseball
that
game.
That part
was the thing that was going to spice it up. But what's also sad about it is it reminds me of when the whole Bud Light thing was happening. People were shooting up cans because they dared to do a brand deal with a trans person.
Right.
It's like this performative violence. And it's like, it's so stupid because you're right. It's homophobia. It's racism. But it's also just like, let people have fun. You don't like that people like a music that you don't like?
Mind your business, right?
Is it that serious? So back to the Academy. Given all this context, how and why did they come up with the Academy Awards? Well, it was another strategy to help with those public relations that we were talking about. So the goal was to reward the most profitable films, the ones that especially promoted an image of good morals and politics in Hollywood. Okay, propaganda. The awards were also about maintaining industry control. Louis B. Mayer was quoted as saying, I found the best way to handle filmmakers was to hang medals all over them. If I got them cups and awards, they'd kill to produce what I wanted. Now, that is so dark.
It's just giving evil villain, you know?
It's just giving evil villain. It sounds fake.
Yeah.
It's just like, and especially just like the level of hubris to put this in writing and be like, yeah, these fucking idiots, all I gotta do is give them some awards. They'll do whatever I want. And the actors are like, yep, let's go.
And still are.
Listen, give me
the Oscar.
E, a G, a O, and a T. Let's go.
No, I'll settle for any of them. Give me any award. Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So the inaugural Academy Awards was a private event at the Roosevelt Hotel on May 26th, 1929. A ticket cost $5. Today would be $85. And it was attended.
Which is like not bad.
No. I mean, I pay $85. I mean, a Broadway show is three times that. So ready?
Right.
The ceremony was attended by 270 people. The Academy handed out 12 different awards, including some of them that we still know today that are mainstream awards. Best actor, actress, director, cinematographer, screenplay, etc. But there were also some that were very specific to the time that I thought were cool. I thought the best title writing was interesting, which I think you would love, Fran, right?
You already know. I'm very excited about this award.
So title cards or intertitles is the text of a dialogue that would show up on screen. Screen during a silent movie. So they would be like derp, acting it out.
And they would have like little flourishes around the side and like, oh, so cool.
Which is so cool. So just a factoid about that little statuette Oscar. There are a couple of stories about how he came to be named Oscar. One is that in her 1962 autobiography, Betty Davis claimed that she named it after her first husband, Harmond Oscar Nelson.
It is so interesting to me that everybody is clamoring to take credit for naming this statue. A few people have attributed the comment to Academy librarian named Margaret Hemrick about the statuette reminding her of her uncle Oscar. And Herrick would go on to become the executive director of the Academy. So that is probably what gave this rumor staying power.
And I think that rumor is the one I saw the most, right? That Margaret Herrick named it. But then there was also this Hollywood gossip columnist named Sidney Sklosky, who claimed that he gave the little gold man his nickname. He also is accredited with introducing the phrase beefcake, meaning a like sexy guy.
Okay, move over, Shakespeare. Sklotsky is in town. Actress Janet Gaynor would go down in history as the first and the only woman to win an Academy Award that night. The truly notable part is that she won the Oscar for her performance in three different films.
Crazy.
Okay, she won for Seventh Heaven, Sunrise, A Song of Two Humans, and Street Angel. This would be the first and only time an actress would win the Oscar for her performance in multiple films in one night. Now, there were two other women in her category that night, but when you were listed as three of the five nominees...
I mean, right?
Do they have a chance?
Right.
Just go home. At the 50th Academy Awards in 1978, Gaynor was present and she said, "I'm so happy that both the Academy and I survived to celebrate this golden anniversary." She was born in 1906, so she was in there trucking.
Girl.
She said, "I'm here." I love that for her. Just an overachiever.
Maybe all live so long.
Yes.
Right? One of the elements I don't think we talk about enough, though, is that the Oscars are live. And anything can and has happened on live TV, right? Mm-hmm. Insert the slap heard around the world.
Keep my wife's name out of mouth.
I'm going to, okay? okay. That was a greatest night in the history of television. Okay.
I know the world and the Smith Pinkett family in particular are tired of us talking about it, but the slap that was heard around the world is arguably one of the more memorable moments in live television. So continuing with our Academy Award history theme, we wanted to rewind to some of the unexpected moments that happened on the telecast. This is so funny because I did not know so many of these.
So much wild shit. And you're right. It's the live TV of it all. Laurence Olivier forgets to announce the nominees. It's 1985 at the 57th Academy Awards show when famed actor Sir Laurence Olivier is announcing the final award of the evening Best Picture. However, the 78-year-old legend, goddamn, let his ass...
let him take
why
a knee.
Why you do this to this man? He gets such an overwhelming reception from the crowd that he forgets to list the nominees. I feel for him.
I do too.
He gets up there and he says, "Thank you. More than I have ever wanted or tried to thank anybody for such a perfectly wonderful reception, thank you so much. I hope I won't let the occasion go down too badly. I'm here to present the Best Picture Award, and the winner for this is Amadeus. He said, let me get thank you.
And good night.
Honestly, I'm not that mad at him for doing that.
I mean, listen, everybody knows who's nominated. Yeah, just, you know, give the award out. That's what he's there for.
You know, I'm not going to put the cart before the horse. Let's keep going with some of these things that happened. So Saul Zanis, the film producer who accepted the award for Amadeus, he was just such a professional. He got up there and he mentioned the other nominees in the category during his acceptance speech. Now, thank goodness he remembered, because you would look real stupid trying to come up with those. You? What's your name?
John.
You know who I'm talking about?
John.
What's the movie that we saw, the girl's titties? What was that one? Sorry, I didn't see that one. I heard you were good, not good enough, because that's why I won.
Everybody deserves an award, but good night. That would be me. This would also be me. So Jennifer Lawrence falls at the 2013 awards show. Actress Jennifer Lawrence is walking up the stairs to accept her award for Best Actress in Silver Linings Playbook at the 85th Academy Awards show, and she trips over her Dior gown, like just nightmares, everyone's nightmare. She did the only thing you could do, you know, in that instance, it's just laugh at herself. She just kind of cracked up, got back up, and then went up to accept the award. The crowd gave her a standing ovation, to which she responded, "You guys are just standing up because you feel bad that I fell, and that's really embarrassing, but thank you."
You know, this is one of those things where I feel like this moment kind of solidified J-Law's status as like the girl next door. Everybody, she's so hot, but she's so like relatable and cool. You know what I mean?
She's always the girl who's like the George Bush of it all. She's gonna drink a beer with you.
She's like really hot, but she eats pizza and she like likes football and she doesn't take herself too seriously. You know what I mean? She's a cool girl.
Well, it's that like pick me thing, right? It's like we're imposing the pick me. No, I want to pick her because she's like chill and relaxed and, you know, laid back.
Yeah, but it is that thing of like, this moment was going to be mortifying for anybody, but the way she like was self-deprecating and like joked about it, it really just made her seem so endearing. So shout out to her. I mean, I didn't love that movie. Honestly, I thought the movie was fine.
I couldn't tell you what it's about. Can't remember at all.
It's her and Bradley Cooper falling in love in rehab. And again, it's fine. I think she's a talented actress.
Yeah, I love her.
But like, to me, the movie is not for me. I'm not the target audience. But that moment, again, just really, just the movie star in her. I felt like, okay, I get it. Like, she's cool.
But like I said, like, what other recourse did she have? She just to laugh and keep going. You're going to be mortified? No, you got to get up there and keep going.
But that's the thing. Some people wouldn't have laughed. Some people, you know what I mean? Like some people, what's his name? Your friend, Joe Coy, up there yelling and getting mad at
my
people.
Friend,
I didn't say love him.
Wait a minute. Pump the brakes now. Pump the brakes now. I said I enjoyed his comedy.
You are a Joe Coy. You're a Coy head. I know you are.
Get out of here.
But look at how he acted. He essentially had his own trip and fall.
Under pressure.
And he started yelling at the audience.
He really did.
You know what I mean? Yeah. So like, not everybody is able to laugh at themselves. And that's just my point.
Well, and that's hilarious because he's also a comedian. So there's that.
Exactly. So another instance, 1974. A man streaks at the 46th Annual Academy Awards. It's the end of the evening, just before the iconic Elizabeth Taylor is announced to give the award for Best Picture, when an artist, photographer, and gay rights activist, Robert Opel, runs across the stage naked on live TV. And it was part of his ongoing protest against nudity bans at local LA beaches. Sir, this is not the place.
It's not the forum at all.
What do we have to do with the beach? So he had previously shown up naked to LA City Council meetings. Sir, this sounds like a case.
That's much more appropriate. More of a protest.
Right, okay, at least there makes sense.
Right.
But like, what the fuck? The best part of the entire moment is that the actor announcing Elizabeth Taylor, David Niven, recovers after the streak like a fucking boss.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, that that was almost bound to happen. But isn't it fascinating that... fascinating to think that the, probably the only laugh that man will ever get in his life is by stripping off and showing his shortcomings.
Now, Robert, you better stay, put the pants on and stay home. Are you kidding me? I would have died.
I could not think of that. It's a split second where he thinks of this line and it just kills.
Oh, yeah. Oh, and I would have been in the audience. He's a writer, bitch. He's a writer.
Give him an award. Where's his Oscar?
Elizabeth, sorry. We've given him the gold statue.
For real. So another one, and this one is pretty excellent, pretty memorable in our minds. In 2017, Moonlight wins Best Picture, but La La Land is announced. So while announcing Best Picture at the 89th Academy Awards ceremony, Faye Dunaway and Warren Beatty announced La La Land as the winner when it was actually Moonlight. So the audience cheers. The orchestra begins to play as everyone involved in the making of the film, they make their way to the stage. So Jordan Horowitz, one of the producers, he gives his entire speech. In the middle of the second producer, Mark Platt, speaking, you can see the producers looking left and right, and there's some kind of commotion going on off screen. Then they pull out to a wide shot, and then everyone's in commotion. Then a tech person on headset just comes up and hands Jordan Horowitz an envelope. The third producer is in the middle of his speech, and then he just says, "Oh yeah, we lost, by the way." Then Jordan announces, "This is no joke. Moonlight has won Best Picture." Evidently, Warren Beatty I was handed an envelope that said Best Actress, which was Emma Stone, and the name La La Land, the title was on that. So they got confused, which is not their fault, but it's, you know, it's so hard to watch this thing. The entire room is like cringing and in shock.
The moment that they realize it's Moonlight, Trevante Rhodes like grips his chest like he's having a heart attack. It's incredible. Like, I have to get into like a nerdy graphic design factoid here, because the reason for this mistake is not just because they were given the wrong card, but rather because the cards had terrible typography. There is a great video by Vox called "Bad Typography Has Ruined More Than the Oscars" and explains this. So on the card, actress in a leading role is the smallest thing on the card. Delana,
oh my God,
a screenshot.
It is. Holy shit.
I put a screenshot in the doc. This is not how our eyes work, okay? We read in order of importance. In design, this is what we call hierarchy. The biggest thing on the page is usually and should be the most important thing. So on this card, Emma Stone would have been easy to clock if they had it bigger on the fucking page and they would have known it was the wrong card. Instead, Emma Stone and La La Land are the same size. Wow. And when you see Warren Beatty reading the card, you can see he's confused.
He's confused.
You can see he's like, this is weird. Why is Emma Stone's name on here? And then he just goes, I'm just going to read La La Land. So on the card, Oscars is the biggest thing, and it's very
we know where we are, guys. We know where we are.
Okay,
thank you very much.
You don't need that on the fucking card. Why is that there? Actress in a leading role is so small, and it's at the bottom,
the very bottom
of the card. And then Emma Stone and La La Land are in the middle at the same font. Now, what it should have looked like is actress in a leading role at the top, not very big, like medium size. Emma Stone, really big, followed by La La Land, and then put the Oscars at the bottom. So this is so interesting to me. Friends, when you're making something, a graphic for your comedy show, an invitation for your birthday party, the most important info, the date, where the place is, in this instance, who the winner of the fucking award is, should be the biggest thing on the page, because that's how our eyes work.
I'm going to tell you, this person, this graphic designer never worked again.
I hope not.
Never worked again. I went back to school. So we would be remiss if we did not mention another factoid with regard to Oscars, the Academy Awards history. Hattie McDaniel was the first Black person to win a Oscar. In 1940, she won Best Supporting Actress for her performance in Gone with the Wind. Hattie McDaniel's story is significant Oscar history, not only because of her milestone achievement, but also because her achievement was despite the racist odds that she faced. She moved to Los Angeles in 1931 and made her film debut as a Southern house servant in the Golden West in 1932. Now, not that I'm trying to be anybody's house servant, but I would love that. Move 1 year, book a big job my next year, you know?
Yeah, so, the Hollywood story, like a rags to riches story.
For real. So Black people at this time were relegated to playing domestic roles, cooks or servants and the like. And McGinney would go on to play over 40 domestic servants in the 1930s. This was at the height of Jim Crow. So when Gone with the Wind actually premiered in Atlanta, Hattie McDaniel couldn't even attend.
Now, which is isn't that some shit?
Crazy.
Could you imagine?
Pissed. And then two months later, she would go on to win the Academy Award for her performance in Gone with the Wind.
Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Science, fellow members of the motion picture industry and honored guests, this is one of the happiest moments of my life. And I want to thank each one of you who had a part in selecting me for one of the awards. For your kindness, it has made me feel very, very humble. And I shall always hold it as a beacon for anything that I may be able to do in the future. I sincerely hope I shall always be a credit to my race and to the motion picture industry. My heart is too full to tell you just how I feel. And may I say thank you.
It would be nearly 25 years before Sidney Poitier would be the second Black person to receive an Academy Award.
The fact that we are now in 2024 and Black people are still having the first Black person in any damn thing,
I know,
is a bonkers. So now that we have gone over some Academy Awards history, it's time for us to do what we do best and pitch how we would fix this award show. But before we do that, let's take a quick break.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
And we are back. Before we jump into our fixes, Delon, do you have any thoughts about what's not working with the Oscars? What is like the crux of this award show?
Well, I don't know that I feel like I'm a part of it, right? Despite being in the industry. So I feel like we are like watching something that is so segmented and it's also extremely long. And so I'm asked to come and watch an insular group of people like, in a circle jerk, ostensibly, right? Give each other awards, and I kind of feel like on the outside of that. And so I think award shows in general, I've kind of like taken a back seat on, and I watch them here and there. I just kind of get the highlights later on. Yeah. But it being too long and it being like so elite is kind of. Yeah. Although the irony is, I can't wait to be part of the club.
Well, and I would say that like the elitism is kind of baked into it, right? Like that's kind of the point. For me, it's too long. I also just feel like the host thing, it just doesn't work for me. Mm. We keep trying all these different people, and I will be the first to say hosting an award show is just hard. And we talked about this before. Yeah. You're getting thrown in with not a ton of time to prep. You have to make your material clean. It's really not about you. Like you got to keep the engine on the track. It's live. I mean, there's just so much going on. Right. So that's one of my things that I feel like is lacking.
When we were talking about that Moonlight moment, here's why I trust Jimmy Kimmel so much as the host, because he got up there and he honored the awkward of the moment and really tried to offer something that was very heartfelt and then joke. and then joke, yeah. right? And I was like, man, that the skill that that requires, I don't have it, but few people I think do have it. So big ups to you, Jimmy.
Yeah, and the thing, and to that point, sorry to sit here and, you know, rag on Joe Coy, even somebody that you assume would have it, you think this is a stand-up comedian, they're going to be able to handle this. Even they're not able to. And a lot of comedians, look at Chris Rock. Not, no, listen, he got slapped in the face, regardless of if you think the slap was warranted or not.
Right.
I think he earned the slap. He just didn't know. He didn't know how to recover from that. You know, I don't think anybody does.
No.
But I would also say throughout the night, he wasn't doing a great job. He wasn't funny.
He wasn't calling anybody in. Chris Rock's comedy isn't calling you in. It's pointing at people and poking, you know?
Yeah, and that's true. But sometimes that works. Like Ricky Gervais
does it too, but Ricky Gervais is a little more zoomed out. It's a little more global. It's not saying that actor, that person. It says the industry or this problem with the industry, which I really appreciate.
And to be fair, I don't fuck with Ricky Gervais. I have many side eyes for him, but he's very funny.
I know.
And when he hosts, you're like, he's one of the rare times when he's hosting, you're like, oh, this is going to be good.
It's going to be good.
Like, I'm seated. Like, I know he's going to say something, and like everybody, he can roast people in the room like nobody else. And that's like the rare time that in my experience that I've seen a host where I'm like, oh yeah, this is really good.
Right. And it gives that element of it being a show, right? If a good host is like, oh, I'm also here to see how you're going to package all of the movies, you know, and package the evening and the event. And my fix is that this is like the awards part of it is like less than exciting, right? Mm-hmm. It's kind of like a big commercial for me for movies.
Yeah.
And so I would rather just you show clips of the movie and have like a documentary style. We talk about this a lot with the media that we talk about, but like a documentary style presentation of all of the films, right? Have the directors or the actors, like almost like a junket, have them like come and talk about the films. And, you know, there were 50 movies that came out this year, but these are the five nominees that are going to talk about their film at the Academy Awards, right? So everyone gets that, more people get that recognition versus like just superlatives for the best.
So you mean you want it to be more of like a inside the actor's studio type like conversation around the films?
You know when they show, like they don't do this in every award show, but they show like a clip of the film. Right. Mm-hmm. And that's what tends to make these presentations really long. I'd say take out the award and the speeches and just give us those clips of films. Right.
Oh,
really?
I always hate it.
Really?
I feel like they always pick the weirdest fucking clip. The clip will be like, and that's why you're a dog. And you're like, the fuck is this movie about?
Well, take away that 2 minutes, 3 minutes, 5 minutes of a speech, and you get a lot more time to show a little bit more of the film.
Yeah, okay. All right.
Listen, you ain't got to like it. It's my fault.
I sure don't.
Well, tell me what yours is then, madame.
Okay, so here's my thing. I feel like now I've been trying to be better about watching more films. You and I talk about this.
Yeah.
But I think part of the problem for me is a lot of the movies that get nominated, I hadn't heard about them till they got nominated.
Right.
I'm like, I never heard about this movie before. Like, I maybe heard of one or two, and I work in the fucking business. So when you're trying to get people who are just like normal, everyday folks that have jobs and shit to care about these movies, I feel like we're missing some component that goes along with the Oscars. Like, is there some sort of like tie in with movie theaters or with a streamer when the nominees get announced that you can watch all of them in one place? Or there's some sort of like live viewing event that has the talk back element that you're talking about, so that I go into the Oscars more invested because I've seen the films. Because I'm watching the Oscars and I'm like, okay, like that one, I don't know if it was good or not. I didn't get to watch it. Like sometimes you can't find it anywhere. It did a very limited release.
Sure.
It wasn't at all, you know what I mean?
Well, I think sometimes the Oscars are used as that launching pad to get people to watch the film. So like, even if you know, Moonlight hadn't won, you've now heard of Moonlight and you're going to hopefully do the work to find the film somewhere.
Yeah, see, what I'm saying is I want that before the Oscar.
Right, no, but I totally hear you, but I'm just saying it's used as like the advertisement for the film.
Yeah, I just feel like some sort of like lead up would be really, really interesting. And then I don't know if they've done this a few times, and I really liked it, where, and this might just be like me, nerdy writer brain, but I loved when you got to see on screen the scene and then like part of the script on screen, or like when they would do the costume.
Have they done that? Oh yeah.
They've done that before, or like when you're getting costume design and then you get to see like the costumes being made on the side, like, or, you know, or when it's like the music portion, it's the live orchestra is doing the orchestration from part of the song. Like, I love those like behind the scenes elements, and they don't, to me, I feel like they don't do them
enough. It sounds like you would like it to be more of a like behind the scenes documentary commercial.
Yeah, but like, I'm not.
I don't know.
But not with like a talk back like in the middle.
That's not the bulk of the idea.
But you're saying you're get rid of the speeches. Yes. I'm okay with the speeches. And then I would also really love, again, getting regular people invested, I think requires like making it feel accessible to them. And like, you know how they have like the Miss Golden Globes where they have, it's usually some celebrity's kid gets to present a Golden Globe. Like, what if they did something like that, but with like community, with like young actors,
a young theater, for a kid from a theater program,
young theater performers. So like, instead of having, you know, Jennifer Lawrence or like past winners present awards, like what if it's some like cute little high schooler and Jennifer Lawrence and they come present
love
the award
that idea
together, and there's some sort of like tie-in in the months leading up to the Oscars of like, it's almost like a mini Oscars for young actors or young performers to get
the
chance to go to the Oscars. So then like, you know what I mean? They're like, from the great state of Minnesota, we've got so-and-so, you know what I mean? Like, it's almost like, so it's not superlatives, but it's like state pride, but also young people, but also giving back and like the arts.
It's more of a buy-in from people, right? It's like, it's like saying you too could be here, right? You too are part of the conversation. It's not just something you're seeing these rich people acquire and maintain. Yes. It's saying, we want to include you. Welcome to a seat at the table, you know?
Yes. Especially because we know there are lots of Nepo babies and there are, and it's not to say that like, people who've come from meager means you can't feel invested and happy for them. But when I think about every year, the views for the Oscars are trending downward.
Yeah.
People aren't watching them. They're too long. They're boring. And I think that if people were like, oh my God, you know, she went to my local high school, or like that person's from this state, this is so cool. Or like, oh my God, that little 13-year-old girl is up there getting to present an award with Jennifer Garner, Jennifer Lawrence, or Jennifer Lopez, Jennifer, her and a Jen.
I do really love this. I mean, it becomes like, you know, a Miss America pageant, but having a representative from every state, I think that's really smart. And again, it makes it about everyone. And I know there are international people that are a part of the Academy, and so like that might put a little wrench in it, but I do really enjoy that.
But even that could be really cool. Like when the international segment comes,
100%.
Like maybe there's like young people from, you know, different countries are representing or doing each of the nominees, like, you know, like standing up from the audience and like speaking in their native tongue with like a little caption on the screen or something. I don't know.
I dig that. No, I really dig that. So one of the other fixes I had was the In Memoriam. I really want that earlier. I want that at the fucking top of the show.
Yeah.
And I know people are like, well, that's morbid. I have been accused of being quite morbid. But I think it's honoring. I think it's saying, here are all the people we lost this year. We see you. We hear you. We wait so long for it. And this is a personal thing. By the time of we get to it, I'm like, oh, goodness me, we have to do this. And then three more awards. I'd rather like honor those people up front.
And maybe my pitch might be like, is there a more creative way to weave it throughout the ceremony?
That part.
Like tying some of the people that we're honoring to some of the films, you know what I mean? Like, you know, we're doing Best Actress and this year we lost so-and-so as Best Actor, that won a Best Actress
like
or something like that. Or like we play a clip of them winning an award or something like that. And we weave it into the next nominees or whatever. I also just think, unfortunately, every year they forget somebody.
I was just thinking the same thing.
I don't know how we fix that, but like, y'all gotta, and maybe that's where the weaving it in and out could be helpful. Because if you forget somebody, you could be like, yo, we got to throw them in act three because we forgot somebody.
Well, that part, that is, because it's live. But also, like, what is that Academy librarian doing? Because isn't that, I would think that's their job. Like, making sure everyone's accounted for.
And look, and the thing is, it's like, mistakes are going to happen.
Sure.
It's impossible to include everybody, but there's got to be a better checks and balances.
But I honestly think, I think it's hard to say these people were part of the Academy and are contributed to the industry and not include people. So, friends, now it's time for everyone's favorite segment, The Glow Up, where we give props to those who turn themselves around without our help. Fran, why not? Why not? Go first.
Okay, so my glow up this week goes to Michelle Williams, and I'm talking about the black one.
Because you know she we need to know.
You have to be specific. She's in a new commercial for Uber Eats Australia, and it is so fucking funny. Dawn, I don't know if you've seen this commercial.
I have not.
But I want us to watch it because it is so fucking funny.
Okay, okay. My Uber One membership savings don't disappoint.
You know what is disappointing? I was in one of the most iconic girl groups and no one recognizes me.
Michelle! Michelle, you spit that out! Hmm? Naughty Michelle! Michelle, naughty!
Who calls their dog Michelle?
Sorry, but are you Michelle Williams?
Yes.
Yeah. Chuck your wallet.
At least my Uber One savings don't disappoint.
I'll take you anywhere, Michelle.
Isn't that so funny?
What I love about it is like she's trolling herself, right?
Yes.
She's trolling herself, which is like, let everyone be in on the joke.
Yes.
Say the joke before anyone else can. And it's brilliant.
I love that. Like, we love it when celebrities like wink at us. And the reality is like Michelle Williams, the bank account is no doubt stacked. Okay. She is very comfortable, beautiful, talented, successful, all of those things. But we cannot deny that she and Kelly are in Beyonce's shadow. And they've both tried to make their own paths for themselves. And even like, you know, the white Michelle Williams, the black Michelle Williams of it all. She had a reality show on BET for a second that was like not.
Was that about her being a gospel singer?
She had a show with her fiance and then they broke up. And then she had a show trying to find like a gospel girl group or something. And then she just has tried a lot of different things. And so for her to be in this commercial where she's like, look, I'm getting a fat check. You know, she's getting a fat check. She looks beautiful. Right. And she's showing us that she has a sense of humor. I just,
And to say nothing of her and Kelly being in Beyonce's shadow, there are also three other women that were part of that group.
Yeah.
And Beyonce, now we all know Beyonce was a part of Destiny's Child. And so like, she really gets lost in the shuffle. You know what I mean? So to like you said, to wink at us and be like, I know that this is a thing, is so sweet. And it makes her endearing. And I think it's so smart. I
shout out to the ad agency that came up with that idea, but also shout out to Michelle for being willing to poke fun at herself. Cause I know that that's not easy. And there was like a whole joke, like the quote unquote poor Michelle. And, you know, people have made jokes at her expense throughout her career. And so she really gets the last laugh in this commercial. So my glow up absolutely goes to her this week.
So my glow up actually goes to Jon Stewart. He has returned to The Daily Show on Monday night. Mm-hmm. After Trevor Noah left, they were looking for a new host. They were trying all these people. And then Jon said, I'll come back on Mondays. I'll come back. Stop clamoring. One night a week. One of the reasons I think it's really important that he is back is because of his voice. Yeah. Like, we just need it. We need his like salient, comedic, to the point reflection on what's happening in the world right now, and particularly with politics, but I think all over. I think also his work that he did to advocate for the veterans in Congress, also the 9/11 stuff he did with those veterans, right? With those people that were affected in 9/11. I think he is just such a voice we need right now. Yeah. And there aren't many like him, like really being able to take people to task and hold feet to the fire. So welcome back, Jon. I have been watching on Instagram and I will continue to watch.
I mean, look, Jon Stewart really revolutionized satirical comedy. More people were watching The Daily Show instead of actual news when Jon Stewart was at his peak. And to your point about his salient voice, he's really funny, but he is really smart. Yes. I love that he was able to negotiate a one day a week. You know, you the shit. When, because they were asking him, I remember when I was on friggin' Nightly Show and Jon was our one of our executive producers, people were begging him all the time to come back because that was our first time dealing with Trump in the election cycle. And it was like, Jon Stewart is the voice we need. And Jon was out on a farm in New Jersey with his goats. He was like,
he said, I did enough.
He said, I am absolutely not going to do it. So the fact that he's now back on his own terms is an absolute glow up. And I know he's being taken well care of.
Oh, you know he is. You know he is. Well, and I, you know, I'll also mention Rachel Maddow, who I also am a big fan of. She negotiated one day a week. She does her show on Mondays as well. And it allows these people to do other projects and live their lives and also still be part of the conversation. Because when we have these brilliant people who really are holding feet to the fire, but in John's case, you know, doing it with comedy, which I think sticks just a little harder when someone's railing at you, but they're making you laugh, it just lands better for some reason, you know? So, you know, Rachel Maddow does it too, and we need both of them. So give them what they want. If they want to do one night a week, give it to them.
Yeah, I worked with a really brilliant showrunner, Dan Powell, who also worked on The Daily Show and has worked on tons of different comedy shows. And one thing that he said that always really stuck with me is that creatives need to live their lives in order to get the inspiration for their art. And when you say to somebody, you have to be at work till midnight, five nights a week, you need your staff, your talent, the way that Dan explained it, he was like, they need to go on dates. They need to get in fights with their roommates. They need to ride the subway. They need to have daily experiences that things to write about and respond to. And so in this instance, you know, look, if you have the stamina to do five nights a week, a la one of the Jimmys, go for it. But I would guess that Rachel Maddow and Jon Stewart are able to give you, or even the Samantha Bees or the John Olivers, right? Are able to give you a better, well thought out and processed analysis of what they're talking about because they got 4 days to figure out and ruminate on whatever the fuck they want to talk about before they bring it to you on that one night a week. So it's really so smart. True.
Yeah.
All right, class, we want to hear from you. Did we fix it? And whose version of the Academy Awards would you rather attend? Do you want to not see the awards? Or do you want to see young people being highlighted all across the country and giving back? You know, you're seeing people from every walk of life being up on that stage.
I can't stand, class, I can't stand this one. I can't stand.
Or maybe you would like to suggest a TV show, a celebrity, or a brand that we should fix in the future. Hit us up on Instagram at FixItPod or email us letmefixitpod@gmail.com. You can also email us asking us for advice. We will keep you anonymous. Make a fake name and we will fix whatever is going on in your life. Slide into our inbox. We are ready for you.
Because we are about to let it rip with that. We're about to give the world advice. And I just want to give a personal glow up or shout out to Francesca for all the work she does on our Instagram, because that is all her doing all of that editing and she kills it.
Thank
you, Fran. And don't forget, we also have a YouTube channel that Francesca edits. It's youtube.com/@fixitpod. And if you enjoyed this episode, as usual, please be sure to give us a rating on iTunes, Spotify, Amazon Music, or your favorite podcast app. I am DeLon.
And I'm Francesca. And this was
Woman Fix It!
We have to put... Oh my God! DeLon, I was literally about to start doing Academy! Oh my God, we have the same brain. Gotta put that like long music.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.